This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za. Tech Tuesday.
Now, this interview is brought to you by the Department of Science and Innovation, making sure it's possible. So, science and scientific advice saves lives and drives tech revolutions. And the COVID-19 pandemic has proven how important it is for countries to prioritize science, right? What has happened is that the National Advisory Council on Innovation, an entity of the Department of Science and Innovation, ensures that government receives sound scientific advice. So we are joined now to discuss this matter around how is it that science can evolutionize the way in which we do things in this country. So today we're joined by Dr. Phakathi, who is a clinical head of the Department of Surgery at the University of KwaZulu-Natal, another individual who's really a trailblazer when it comes to science and how is it that science can better the lives of us. And Dr. Phakathi is also the National Advisory Council on Innovation member and the chairperson of the council's Transformation Subcommittee. Dr. Bidumelo, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. Welcome to Power Lunch.
Thank you very much for welcoming me, and good afternoon to the listeners.
So now you are one of the youngest women to actually become a surgeon, which is significant achievement and honor. How was this dream born? I mean, one would say that surely I think you must know that you want to be a surgeon before you could even walk.
Yes, no, that is so true. So what sparked my interest is it was more of curiosity, because I remember back in at medical school as an undergrad, we saw that there were few women in the Department of Surgery. So the question is, why? Why are we seeing few women? What is it that is blocking women from pursuing career in general surgery? I think that's what sparked my interest. I continued to do the research, and then I realized that general surgery, that's where I really want to be. Obviously, this became a reality after completing my internship. Obviously, during internship, we get exposed to different disciplines. And at the end of that 2 years of internship, it was clear that general surgery is the route I need to pursue.
Wow. And pursuing one's goal is definitely never without its stumbling blocks, especially as a Black woman in a field where it's not necessarily dominated by Black women. What have been your greatest realizations and even challenges in being able to realize, the dream of becoming a surgeon?
In my case, obviously, we get to be looked down upon or get judged by the fact that you're a woman. And then we get told things like, you will not make it. I remember so well when I started, I was given 3 months. I was told that, no, I won't last until 3 months in the Department of Surgery. Obviously, 3 months passed by, and then I continued. I think in my third year as a registrar, I still hear the very same thing. You will not make it. You're just wasting your time. You could have used this time for something else. And obviously with general surgery, the long working hours and also the need, because remember back in the day, surgery was a male-dominated discipline. So you find that as a woman, somehow you want to work extra hard compared to your male colleagues, because at the back of our mind, there's that thing that says, you know what, you need to make sure that you don't fail. You don't fail and also make sure that we prove those people who think we cannot make it wrong. And in terms of the support, what enabled me to press on, obviously the support from my spouse, my husband, he's been amazing. And also myself as a praying woman, my faith in God helped out a lot. And also my colleagues. I've got great colleagues, people who think the same way, who really want to see us achieving what I call my inner circle of friends. That really helped a lot. And also getting a mentor. My mentor was not in surgery, but he helped me a lot. He helped me a lot. Just like spending a few minutes with him, he sort of changed how I viewed surgery. He changed how I viewed academia. He sort of fast-tracked my progress in my career.
Wow. And you know, you speak here about the different types of surgeons. It's good to see that you are surrounded by good people and having good people around you in pursuit of your very same dreams. Breast cancer. I want us to talk a little bit about breast cancer because it's among the leading causes for women to even have surgery, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not easy for any woman to actually undergo such an operation. In terms of just how the surgery process has evolved and the introduction of technology, how has it fared over time? Because even having to even make the discovery that you may have breast cancer, it's quite a scary thing for a lot of women.
Yeah, obviously with improvement in technology and also with availability of more treatment modalities for breast cancer, things have changed now. Like back in the days when a woman had breast cancer, we knew for sure that the woman is going to lose the entire breast. But we are now in the era whereby we try by all means to save the breast. And what enabled us to do so is that with increased awareness, more women present early for screening. And through the screening, in some cases, we're able to diagnose the cancer before one can actually start feeling any palpable lumps, or in cases whereby women notice any change in their breast, they are able to seek help earlier on, and this will enable us to be able to stage the cancer early. And we know that cancer, when it's being diagnosed at an earlier stage, we are able to do what you call breast conserving surgery. We are able to remove the cancer and making sure that the breast that is left, it is still aesthetically looking okay. Yes.
Sure.
Things have changed. And also in terms of the technology, we've got more imaging modalities than we did in the past. And those modalities obviously ensure that we are able to determine the extent of the cancer in the breast, making it easier for us to identify those women who will benefit from breast-conserving surgery.
But then why do women continuously die from breast cancer? I mean, if it's one of the most treatable forms of cancer, we still have women, and particularly in the most disadvantaged areas and vulnerable areas, where they are dying. Is it an education or is it an access thing, or is it actually both?
What we've observed is that some women, they still present late. They still present late because remember, like some women, they've got their different beliefs. A person might have a lump in their breast. Before they come to the clinic or the hospital, you find that they would have gone to find help somewhere else.
Oh.
And you find that by the time they come, unfortunately, the cancer has grown. In some cases, the cancer has spread all over the body. And also, considering the socioeconomic status of the patient that we see, especially at public hospitals, you find that it is poor. You find that if a woman has got, let's say, 100 rand, for the entire month, just an example, and the woman thinks of going to the hospital whereby the woman will have to catch two or three taxis to get there, that on its own tends to discourage women. And I think one of the things that we can actually prevent this is to change our way of thinking, especially as clinicians, as surgeons, because currently we're having the centralized specialized breast unit. We need to change our thinking whereby we are now establishing a decentralized breast unit. We are strengthening the level of service at the primary healthcare level, at the district hospitals, at the regional hospitals, instead of just focusing on strengthening the level of care at central hospitals.
Sure.
We need to somehow meet the patients halfway.
Yeah, and I think I loved what you said about how the woman present late, and I think the tagline is early detection saves lives.
Yes.
So if you don't detect and make sure that your medical profession knows and you're trying other means, you're taking away from the early detection saves lives mandate, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You also serve as an advisor to the Minister of Higher Education, Science and Innovation, as council member of the NACI. Let's talk a little bit about this, the NACI and the role that you play in this regard. What is it? If I'm hearing about this council for the very first time on the show, what is it?
Okay, the NACI, we call it NACI. It's a National Advisory Council on Innovation. We serve as the advisory body to the minister, like you mentioned. Obviously, we advise the minister on matters pertaining to science, technology, and innovation. And we are able to provide that advice through the research expertise and also the stakeholder engagement. So I'm one of the council members in NACI, and also in NACI, I'm overseeing the subcommittee of transformation. And why transformation? Obviously, like in 2019, there was a white paper that was published by the Science and Technology, and then they saw the need that we need to to come up with a way, we need to come up with a framework where we are monitoring, we are evaluating the transformation in the national system of innovation. The truth is, when you look at the institutions in the national system of innovation, all the institutions, they do have the transformation policies. But the question is, how will we know that we are there is transformation in the NSI? And then how will a transformed NSI look like? So that's why there was a need to come up with this committee whereby we are developing that framework so that when we know that the NSI is transformed, we know how it looks like. And also through this subcommittee, obviously we had to find a way, or we had to come up with a definition of transformation, because when you look at the dictionary, when you look at in the literature, transformation can mean a lot of things. So we had to come up with a definition of transformation in the NSI so that we know when you say the national system of innovation is transformed, we know exactly what we are looking for. So obviously one of the things that we had to do through this subcommittee was to look at the progress of women in science, engineering and technology, their participation. And what we've observed was that there is, obviously, in terms of the women who are enrolling for fields in science, engineering and technology, there is a huge improvement when you look at, when you compare to the what was published 10 years ago. But though there is a huge improvement, we still see that we're still lacking women in academia in higher position. And not just women, also women of color. We're still lacking representative at that level. Now, the question is, what is it that we can do to make sure that we are well represented, even in senior positions? And then the current project that we are busy with is that one of developing the framework. I can't unpack much on it because it's still a work in progress. But we're hoping to release the findings next year so that we are able to inform the nation that, you know, when you say the NSI is transformed, this is how it must look like. These are the things that we'll know when we have arrived.
I'm hoping we arrive very soon, you know, Dr. Bidumelo, given the journey.
We're almost there.
Well, if young women are listening, you know, and there's a woman that are listening to this, in terms of just being able to give them the advice, I mean, having to be the youngest woman to become a surgeon, having to pursue your dreams, having to be an advisor to the Minister of Higher Education, it took a lot of work, but a lot of belief that you could achieve the strides. Mm-hmm. How would you advise a woman pursuing likewise or even wanting to pursue her dreams, especially when it comes to even the study of medicine, especially within the medicine field? What would you say to her?
I stand by this principle that the sky is not the limit, but it's just a ground. So for women, they must just remember that there is no limit to what they can do and achieve as long as they set their mind on it. It is very important that they define and know their dreams. And also it is very important that they believe in themselves. They believe in their abilities. They believe in their voices. Obviously, there will be people out there saying negative things like, you will not make it. Yes, we turn a deaf ear to those people and focus on working hard towards achieving our dreams. The other thing is that it is important that you surround yourself with like-minded people. You surround yourself, you choose your inner circle very carefully. And lastly, it is important that you get yourself a mentor. Get yourself a mentor and also avail yourself to mentor others.
I like that. Avail yourself to mentor others as well. Yes. Dr. Bidumelo, it's been an absolute pleasure being in conversation with you, and all the best, really. And thank you for not giving up on your dreams. I think because you didn't give up on your dreams, you were able to have inspiring conversations of this nature, where I'm hoping that many people can realize that it's not been possible for them as well.
True. Thank you very much.
Dr. Bidumelo Phakathi there, National Advisory Council on Innovation member and chairperson of the Council's Transformation Subcommittee. This interview was brought to you by the Department of Science and Innovation, making sure it's possible.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.